Welcome to the Peter Stevens Motorcycles Vic MX Recap Show, presented by MotoCred. Peter Stevens Motorcycles have been supporting grassroots racing for 50 years and continue to do so into 2024 with the Peter Stevens Victorian Motocross Championship. Peter Stevens have over six locations with Ringwood and Dandenong in the southeast of Melbourne, Geelong and Adelaide, along with the new stores, PSNow in Perth and coming soon to Western Sydney. Stocking all major apparel and parts brands, manufacturers and more, Peter Stevens, everything for the ride. Presented by MotoCred. MotoCred have over 600 products to suit your bike, from tools, stands, foot pegs, levers, and everything else to bling out your dirt bike. To view the range, visit www.motocred.com.au.
There were times I was lost, dark had fear, couldn't see through the rain. In the end it was clear, hit the fan. I was more than one man, who was there to lend a hand? Together we'd stand, always at my back, my guardian soldier. Team pulled together, united we conquer. Blessed is he who in the name of charity carry me when I'm weak, straight through the valley of darkness, pitch blackness, the heartless. Regardless, fear couldn't part us, thick and thin, there by my side. At times we collide, but in the end we ride. And thin, there by my side. At times we collide, but in the end we ride. We ride, 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 ride.
Keep on holding strong. United we stand, divided we fall. Together we belong. I am my brother's keeper. Keep on holding strong. United we stand, divided we fall. Together we belong. I am my brother's keeper.
What is up, Moto fans? This is the Peter Stevens Vic MX Recap Show, presented by MotoCred and brought to you by Mental for Moto and the Inside Dirt Network. I'm your host, Pete Wolf. Well, we've just finished off another amazing weekend of racing at the Peter Stevens Victorian Motocross Championship, all the way over in the westernmost part of the state at the Portland Motocross Club. This time on track, it was the first round for the seniors for 2024. And man, did it deliver. If you haven't done so already, when you finish listening to this episode, go check out some of the content on socials from over the weekend. You'll be able to find it on the Peter Stevens and MVMX pages on Insta, and of course on the Mental for Moto page as well. We've put up podium interviews for the All Powers A-grade class, the Expert Women's, and the MX1 and MX2 A-grade classes as well. And at the time of recording, those interviews combined have received over 25,000 views, which is simply amazing. I did some interviews with a number of other riders at the end of each day, as well as the clerk of the course for this round, Mark Hancock, which by the time this goes live will be up on our socials as well. So go check that out. On that note, if any of the riders listening are keen to do post-race interviews at either of the junior or senior events, please shoot me a message, or better yet, just come see me on the day. I'm the guy in the purple vest, usually armed with a camera. Over the course of the series, it would be great to speak to a bunch of different riders at all levels of competition and capture some of their experiences that they have racing the Peter Stevens Victorian Motocross Championship. Now back to Portland. In the lead up to the weekend, I was a bit nervous about the weather. It is Victoria after all, and we are creeping ever closer to the winter months. But ultimately, the weather gods delivered again, and while it was a bit crisp in the mornings, we were treated to pretty ideal conditions for the whole weekend. And despite some pretty heavy cloud cover, there was no rain on either day and very little wind. This was my first time ever at the Portland Motocross Club, and the facilities, I have to say, are fantastic. There is excess space for parking and pits, good amenities, an excellent canteen, and pretty much everything that you would want at a motocross event. The rider turnout for round one of the senior championship was pretty strong as well, a real testament to the effort that everybody working behind the scenes is putting in. I think across all of the classes, we had about 220 plus entrants, which made for some good gates and great racing. As for the track in Portland, it's clay-based with a concrete start pad, and I had heard that it has a tendency to get pretty hard-packed and a bit blue groove. Walking the track in the morning on the Saturday, despite being pretty wet as we've come to expect in preparation for a day of heavy racing, that was exactly how I thought it was going to shape up as well. It certainly didn't look like it was going to get too deep and ruddy, but man, I could not have been more wrong. By the time we were midway through the motos, it had shaped up to be one of the most technical tracks that I've ever seen, including at the Pro-Am X. Definitely worthy of a state championship, and a real privilege watching the riders out there not only conquer the conditions, but race the conditions as well. So on the Saturday, we had 30-plus and 40-plus vets, all powers A, B, and C, women's clubman and expert, and the junior lights classes. Now, just a bit of a disclaimer. As I said during the MX Review podcast for the first junior round, I simply cannot recap every race, mention every rider, or even class for that matter, or relay every single thing that transpired over the course of the podcast. But over the course of the whole series, the aim is to speak to a whole bunch of different riders, as well as some of the people working behind the scenes at these events, and highlight a few of the key moments at each round. So, leading up to my first guest for this show, I'll open things up with the 30-plus and 40-plus vet classes. Now, across these two classes, we had about 30 riders in total. And for anyone that thinks that vet riders are past their best days of racing, you need to come watch one of these Victorian MX rounds for yourself. The calibre across the entire vet class at Portland was pretty damn impressive. And towards the front end of the field in both the 30-plus and 40-plus classes, these riders are still at a very elite level. One of the highlights of the vet classes for me were the battles between Corey Vandelay, Peter Sullivan, and Matthew Fish in the 40-plus class. These guys were all battling for the lead at various times, and ultimately it was Corey Vandelay who proved too strong on the day, winning all three motos and the overall. Now, one of the big talking points at Portland was the Stark Varg. Saturday was the first time we have ever seen a battery-powered motorcycle compete at a Victorian Motocross Championship in both the all-powers and the vet categories, which are, of course, open classes. I believe there were three, maybe four Starks mixing it up with the petrol-powered bikes. So I thought, as my first guest, it would be cool to speak to one of the riders that piloted one of these silent beasts this weekend and find out what it was like from his perspective. So my first guest for this episode of the Peter Stevens Vic MX Recap Show is 30-plus expert vet rider Michael Davis, or as you might better know him, Mickey D. How are you going, Mickey?
Yeah, good, Pete. Good. Yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. It was a awesome weekend. Very busy. I think I covered about 20 kilometres a day. I think I put in more miles than you guys.
Yeah, you probably did. Got your steps in. Good.
The 30-plus vet class, especially the expert class, man, that's got some seriously fast riders. A few of them still being competitive in the MX1 and MX2 A-grade classes on the Sunday as well. What was it like racing on the weekend?
Yeah, it was definitely a stacked field. There was definitely some riders that I've never raced against that were really, really quick there on the weekend. And, the track was really technical.
Yep.
Yeah, doing it on the new bike was all new to me, first gate drop I've had on the Stark. But all in all, it was a great weekend.
Yep. Well, before we get into a bit of talk about the Stark and you know, the Stark-specific stuff, just talk me through your races on the weekend.
So I've never ridden at Portland before. Our practice qualifying was just going out there, learning the track, and they've got a few sort of speed check sort of scrub jumps that I was trying to remember. There's one before the finish line tabletop that I forgot was there and sort of hit that and landed flat a few times.
Yep.
And then the track was pretty wet in practice, pretty muddy, but by the time my first race came around, it started to form up really well with really good ruts. So race one was the first time I've done a gate drop on the electric bike, and when they put a 5-second board up, all I could hear was all the other bikes rumbling, and I didn't really know what to do with that. We're like getting off the concrete with no clutch, but sort of just gave it sort of quarter throttle, half throttle, and span off the line. So everyone else got the jump on me, and then just went into sort of damage control, sort of tucked in.
Before we go any further, the starting technique on the e-bike. Do you just hold the brake and give it a bit of revs, or do you have to just wait and only twist the throttle once the gate's dropped?
So I didn't really know what to do. So the first race, I held the front brake a little bit and sort of just twisted the throttles till there was pressure through the drivetrain into the front wheel.
Yep.
And I think that's where I went wrong. So it sort of lightened the back wheel up a little bit too much. And when I accelerated, it lit up on the concrete. So I adjusted my start method every race until I sort of found out what the sweet spot was. And it's really just having your weight back a little bit and having no brake on at all, and then just rolling the throttle really gently until you hit the dirt, and then moving all your weight over the bars.
Yep.
And wrap it on. Yeah, so first race, sort of just still learning the track, new pack. I think I ended up rolling around. I got arm pumped too about halfway through the race. Just the track being so demanding. And the first race back of the season.
Yep.
I think I rolled around and up in about eighth. And then the second race, the same thing happened. Sort of spun on the start gate. And then actually I was gonna have a starting map on the new bike at 80 horsepower and then flick it down to about 60 to race with. But Kenny came up to me at practice and he said that everyone has to be locked out at 60.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was going to be a little secret weapon I had that I couldn't use. But, yeah, so 60 horsepower, I pretty much left it at that all day. And, yeah, I had a good battle with Dean Mosick in the second moto.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we were going tit for tat there a little bit, and that was good. And then third moto, got a good start and was up the front of the pack for most of the moto, so finally figured it out how to get it off the thing. It was really good. But the bike handled really well. Yeah, it was pretty much flawless. I just got to get a little bit more fitter for the motos, and it should be a good thing.
Yeah, I know the guys at MV were super excited because it's the first time we've had electric bikes racing at the Victorian Motocross Championship. As you already sort of touched on, I was hearing them talking, like Kenny when he was acting as scrutineer in the morning, and they were looking at, what's the guy's name? Nick Medson. They were looking at his bike, and they were saying, about the Stark Varg obviously has 80 horsepower, and they were checking his one and having a look at how to check, to make sure all the settings are set to 60 horsepower. Yeah, did you get checked throughout the day?
Yeah, so I got checked just before practice because I actually wasn't aware. I thought that it was because they have open classes on the Saturday for Vic titles.
Yep.
And bet class, there's been no horsepower lockout as such. So if you wanted to ride like a CHR, like a 500 two-stroke or whatever you wanted to, you could ride whatever bike on that day. But yeah, Kenny said that because their Starks are locked out for MX1 at 60 and MX2 at 48, that you have to, the maximum you can have is 60.
That's interesting, yeah.
So, it is interesting. It was all new learning curve. And then when I was on the line, they also mentioned that I needed a fire extinguisher at the line.
Yes.
For my race. So luckily I had two electrical fire extinguishers. I had one at my trailer where the bike was pitted, and then one on the line for the day as well.
Ah, nice. Yeah. So once you got your technique down, there's been a lot of talk about the e-bikes having an advantage off the gate. Was that sort of your experience, or do you think, once you're used to it, it'll be an advantage over the petrol bikes?
So coming into this round, I've had the Stark now since January, and I've dragged nearly like every one of my mates on their different bikes just on dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And it has chewed every single one that I've dragged. But so coming into the round, I thought that I had an advantage because they've got that much torque and they have that much traction that when every time the other bike grabs a gear, because I've got no gears, I'll make a bike length up on them.
Yeah, of course.
In a straight line. But with the concrete, it was just a little bit tricky to figure out just to get off the concrete and then adjust the weight quickly without, it was just because I didn't have a clutch. So usually I would drag the clutch off the concrete and then release it fully when I hit the dirt. But because it was all feel through the throttle and you can't, because all the other bikes are roaring and your adrenaline's up, you sort of can't, you got to really feel it in your wrist, happening.
Yep.
But yeah, once I get a few gate drops under my belt on the concrete start, so I think it definitely will, if I can get the jump off the pad, it definitely will be easy because all you got to do is get your feet back on the pegs and twist the throttle and that's it.
Yeah, are you running the back brake as a lever?
No, I run the back brake just as a foot brake, just so it's the same as my other bike when I jump, when I switch to and from.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
The track at Portland, it was deep and wet in the morning and then super ruddy and technical. And obviously the way the track forms up is very different between, say, four strokes and two strokes. And I imagine with a class of like only electric motocross bikes, it would form up differently again. Are there any particular areas, or were there any particular areas of the track at Portland that were more difficult or easy on the electric bike compared to a petrol engine, in your sort of opinion?
I think generally over the whole aspect of riding, the electric bikes are easier in every way, because even if you're coming into like a really deep rut or accelerating out of a corner with heaps of accelerating bumps, you don't have to worry about engine RPM, what gear you're in, you know, if the bike's going to stall or anything like that. You just have to come into the corner, apply the brake, look at where you need to go, and you know every time you twist the throttle, it's going to be the same reaction through the rear tire.
Yeah.
No matter how or what your wheel speed is or anything else, it's going to be the same every time. So I think it was a massive advantage having that. Just so you could spend more of your attention on the track and how rough it is and where the bumps are rather than what the bike's doing. And then I also found it easier to cut out of the rut and then find smoother real estate and apply the power rather than just smash through the rough stuff.
And racing against like riders on petrol bikes, did you sort of notice that they might not be able to hear you coming? And was there any sort of, did you pick up anything like that?
Yeah, so a few times there, especially when you're sitting behind someone, it's sort of your responsibility to know that they know that you're not there. And I was coming over, there's like a section where it's a double into a left-hander, and I was in the right-hand side, and I knew the rider might sort of drift over to the right because that sets you up for the next left-hander. And I just yelled out to him a couple of times to make sure I was there and came through. So, yeah, it is a bit daunting sometimes knowing that they don't know you're there, but I think a few yells or a few, you know, fake beeps or whatever.
Yep.
And definitely more up to you to adjust your riding rather than rely on someone else, because, yeah, they definitely don't know you're there.
I know there's a few jokes, and AJ Catanzaro has done it in the US about putting horns on them, but like I think there'd definitely be a practical application for that. Do you reckon that would work?
100%, because I was even making horn noises when I was going past a few people rather than yelling out. There's I've talked to a few people, and they said that there was a star, not me, but another star was coming up, and they yelled at him, and they thought that the flaggy was yelling at him, so they pulled right off the track. But so I just sort of make horn noises or just give them a bit of a yay, hey, or coming through or something, they can hear. So yeah, horn wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, for sure. Based on what you said, I think it's probably a pretty easy solution. How did you go like with battery life and charging between the motos? Was it hard to do, or you had a plan when you went there of how you were going to do it, but was it easy in practice to implement?
Yeah, so I didn't know how much battery I was going to use on race day, because I haven't had it in that sort of environment before, but it was actually really good. I was coming back in the 70% area.
Oh, yeah.
So I brought a generator with me, and I charged it back up to 100 after practice and every race. And then when I come in, it was around the 70% area, because that's where the bike works the best too, between 100 and say 50%. That's where it's most happy. So I like to keep it right up there charged.
And how do you see the sport evolving with the electric bikes? Like, do you think they'll gradually take over the petrol bikes, or when the numbers increase, will we see a class of electric motorcycles alongside the petrol classes? Like, obviously it's just speculation, but how do you think it'll go long term?
I think that it's definitely the way that everything's going to go, especially because of how many people need to ride in an area where they can't make noise, and the fact that they're closing down because they're getting built up around and stuff like that. I think what's going to happen is the more people that get them and then race against the petrol bike, I think they're going to definitely find out that being on an electric bike is a massive advantage.
Yeah.
And then they're probably going to make a class just for electric bikes. And then as people start gradually coming over, I think that yeah, eventually, but I don't know how many years it's going to take, but I think it's all going to end up sort of that way eventually. Yeah, and they'll definitely improve on their battery life and stuff like that on the bikes as they come out too, which will help.
Yeah, I know there's, you know, there's a lot of fears that it's going to, I guess, negatively impact the racing. But I can say, like, watching, there was quite a few starts out there on the weekend, and watching them race against the petrol bikes, for a start, you don't really actually notice, unless you're looking pretty hard, that it's a Stark, you know, out there. And yeah, it doesn't detract from, you know, as a spectator, from the racing at all, in my opinion anyway. So, no, you know, that was actually a bit of a surprise.
I had multiple people come up to me throughout the day and said, oh, that was awesome seeing that bike. They said, oh, we had to have a double look and see what was going on, because we heard this zip and then a bike was coming out of the corner. It was good to watch.
One thing I did notice, because I was obviously out there taking photos, and you're sort of taking photos of the bikes as they come through, was that the Starks were definitely taking slightly different lines to all the petrol bikes.
Yep.
Like, is that something that you have to figure out, or it sort of just comes by feel when you're out there?
I think that when you're out there, because you're not coming into a corner and you've got all this inertia from the engine, and you're trying to figure out, like, you know, if the bike's carrying on a bit or what's going on, I think you've got a bit more time to look around and maybe find some cheekier lines or a bit more real estate on the track. But I think all in all, you pretty much take the same line generally as the petrol bike. But I think you've got more of a chance to jump out of the main line on an electric bike and find some smoother real estate rather than being on a petrol bike.
Yes, yeah, okay, yep.
And then when you roll the throttle on an electric bike, it just tracks no matter where you are. But it's hard packed. If you're in sand, it'll just jump straight on top and whip over the top.
And do they feel lighter to ride?
They feel really, really light to ride. So they feel like a mountain bike to ride. They feel really nimble. Feels like you can sort of hop and skip over the jumps as you ride them.
Yeah.
But they do weigh roughly the same as a 450 on paper.
Yeah. So
when you push them back onto the stand, they feel heavy, but when you ride them, they feel really light.
Yeah, so if you have to pick it up off the track, you'll know about it, just like with a petrol bike.
Exactly, yeah, definitely. I think it's when you're riding it, it's just because you don't have the feel of the engine sort of inertia weight throwing you around, that it feels lighter.
Yeah.
But then when you jump off and you go to put it back on the stand after a race, you can definitely feel the weight of them still.
No, unreal. I look forward to, an opportunity to ride one at some point.
Yeah.
You run Peter Stevens on your jersey. How do they help you out, and who else supports your program?
Yeah, Peter Stevens is really good. So Scotty and the boys there, Dean, Luke, they all help me out with gear and bikes and that sort of stuff. They're really supportive. With the staff, they're looking at sort of getting the most exposure as they can out of that, seeing a new product in the market. And, it's been great. I think I've been riding for them since 2022.
Yep.
And yeah, they've been a massive help. I wouldn't be able to do all the rounds and stuff that I get to without their help. So,
fantastic to hear. Thanks heaps for coming on to the show and telling us about your experience at Portland and what it was like, especially racing the Stark for the first time. That was super interesting, man. I could definitely keep that going for a lot longer, but it is the Portland Victorian MX Championship recap show, so we might have to save that for another episode.
Yeah, no worries at all, Pete. That was good. Good having a chat.
Cheers. Thank you. And I look forward to seeing you at the next round.
You too.
The next class that we're going to talk about for the Saturday was the Junior Lights. Now, these are the senior championships, so why are the juniors racing, you might ask? Well, when there's hundreds of big bikes circulating over the course of an event, the track forms up very differently to when the junior classes are racing at one of the Junior Vic MX Championships. So the Junior Lights class was adopted into the Senior Championships last year, as it gives the riders that are on the verge of entering the senior ranks an opportunity to step up and gain experience on a senior level track that will generally end up far rougher and far more technical than they're typically used to racing on. And just like the MX3 class at the Pro MX, these younger 250 riders always put on a great show and leave it all out on the track. Up at the front, there were some intense battles on Saturday between Seb Bartlett and Memphis Trevina, with Bartlett scoring the overall with three straight wins. Young Noah James also had an impressive day, rounding out the podium in third. He's only just turned 14, so that's a pretty solid effort racing a 250 against many older and more experienced competitors. Another notable mention of this class is the junior women's rider Emily Lambert, who battled it out with the boys in the A-grade junior lights class, finishing fifth overall for the day. Definitely an impressive effort as well, and no doubt she's going to be a rider to watch over the coming years. Saturday also featured the All Powers A, B and C classes. The All Powers really attracts an eclectic mix of riders that wouldn't often race against one another. On the weekend, it included a mix of MX1 riders, MX2 and MX3 riders, vets, and now we have races on battery-powered motorcycles as well, all on the track at the same time. In the All Powers A-grade class, the riders were predominantly experienced Pro MX campaigners. It was a close contest, but it was Elliott Brothers rider Wilson Greener-Daish, who normally races in MX2, who dominated the points with three straight wins, with Angus Pearce and Jacob Sweet tied on points for second and third, respectively. Some of the best racing of the whole weekend went down in the All Powers B-grade class. Baylen Townsend, Austin Boyd and Oscar Kimber all took out a race win each, with the most consistent results across all three motos, ultimately giving Townsend the overall. Tyler Egan and Charlie Roos, who finished fourth and fifth respectively, were also in the mix at various times. Without a doubt, this was one of my favourite classes to watch, and I can't wait to see these guys battle again at the next round. And finally, on the Saturday, we also saw the combined clubman and expert women's classes. At the pointy end of the field, it was Maddie Healy and Emma Milicevic who went toe-to-toe and who both put on what was arguably one of the best shows of the weekend, with some really close-fought racing across all three motos. With Emma winning the first moto and Maddie winning the second, the overall came down to whoever could take out the third moto. And these women battled all the way to the finish line, with Healy narrowly taking the victory by not much more than a bike length. Rounding out the podium in her first year racing the expert class was Kaylee Cameron. She's one of the riders on the Mental for Moto support program, so it was awesome to see her up on the podium with veterans of the class in Maddie Healy and Emma Milicevic. In the women's clubman class, Carla Burns took out the victory over Chloe Park. It was Chloe's first ever motocross race, so that's a pretty amazing effort. And rounding out the podium was Anastasia Sarakizis, hope I pronounced that right, who took on what was a very challenging track on an 85cc bike, so a huge credit to her as well. This leads me into my next guest for the show, the defending Victorian women's champion and rider who finished second in the expert women's class over the weekend, Emma Milicevic. Welcome to the Vic MX Recap Show.
Thanks for having me. Really excited to be on.
Oh, it's great to have you on. You're obviously the defending women's Victorian MX champion, but I think you've won quite a few titles over the years. How many titles have you actually won?
I think it's up to five now. I've won two as a junior and three in a row as a senior. So it's gone pretty well.
Yeah, it's definitely not your first rodeo, that's for sure.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. Well, there were some awesome battles in a bunch of classes on the weekend, but the battles between yourself and Maddie Healy were definitely one of the highlights of the weekend. Tell us what it was like from your perspective.
Yeah, no, it was good battling with her all weekend. I felt like it was quite a difficult track to pass on, and I kept putting myself in situations where I had to try and make the pass. Like, obviously, in Moto1, she was in front, and I was right on her tail for a couple of laps, and I was putting the pressure on her pretty well, and she just made an error, and I was able to, you know, get into the lead, which was, you know, made it a bit easier on me. And able to check out a little bit after there. Yeah. And then Moto2, I got into the lead pretty quick. We had a little tussle on the first lap, but then got into the lead. And a few laps in, I just made a silly error on one of the ruts and crashed, which made it really difficult on myself. So obviously, I dropped back to second there. I was about 10 seconds down. I was able to whittle down the lead a bit, but not enough to pass it with a couple laps to go kind of thing. So yeah.
Did something else happen in that moto? Because I thought you were like back right on her, pretty much back on her back wheel, and then it felt like you dropped off again a little bit. Did you have a little tip over, or am I just getting the motos mixed up?
That was Moto 3, actually. I was right on her tail start, and then I nearly had a big off at the back, and I lost quite a bit of time there, and I had to kind of work my way back up. So that was Moto 3, and I was on her tail for, the whole moto, but just with the way the track was and the technicality of it, it was like only like really one good line in most corners, so it was very, very difficult to pass, especially on the Saturday. The track had good moisture in it all day until the end, so, I was trying to take those alternative lines and the deep insides and stuff, and it was just costing me a bit of time, and I just couldn't quite get the pass done, which was super frustrating because I felt like my speed was definitely there. I was kind of getting held up in a few sections where it was a bit one-lined, and But it was a good experience. Obviously, I put myself in that position. If I had been out front off the start, I wouldn't have had to deal with that. But it was good battling. She was riding a really good pace, and makes me be a bit more sharper with what I'm doing and execute things a bit better.
Yeah, the way the track formed up, it was like you said, it was on the Saturday, it was super deep, and even on the Sunday, it was still deep and technical, and you raced against some of the boys in the MX2 class on the Sunday as well. Your thoughts on the track, is that the sort of track that you like, and does it suit your style, or do you prefer like a sandier track?
I actually really liked it. I'd never ridden there until the weekend, so I actually found it quite difficult to initially adapt to it, because when I was walking the track on Saturday, it looked a lot different to what, like how I thought it was going to ride was a lot different to what it was.
Yeah.
Because that had a lot of moisture, they sealed the track, so it felt quite firm underfoot. So I thought, okay, it's going to be really fast. And then obviously as soon as I broke the seal, it got very deep straight away. And so that kind of, I wouldn't say threw me a bit, but it was hard to learn a track when there's like 15 ruts every corner. It's hard to get in your flow.
Yeah.
Especially in a class where it's, myself and Maddie kind of setting the pace, let's say. We're in MX2, you can kind of latch on to someone a bit easier. So that was challenging, but I actually really like, I love technical tracks. I love sand tracks, and I love also those sorts of tracks. So, I actually really, really enjoyed the track. It was, a lot better than, say, having a flat, fast track. So I was stoked with that.
Yeah, it definitely produced some great racing. And like you said, in the morning, like I actually wasn't expecting it, and I think a lot of riders got caught out as well, wasn't expecting it to get as deep as it did, as quickly as it did. Like I noticed when I was taking photos, I actually thought it was going to be quite a fast track. And then by the end of sort of practice, obviously it was pretty wet. And then, the first motos, it was already almost like a national spec track, wasn't it?
Yeah, it definitely was. It was pretty bottomless, actually, the way the track formed up. Like, I know a few people from the club said it just keeps getting deeper and deeper, and it definitely did. Even on the Sunday, like, even though it was a bit dry, it got very deep still. The only difference with Sunday was it got a lot more potholes because, it just deteriorated from the Saturday. But, it was very technical track, which was cool. I think it was, great to have that, level of track at the state titles.
Yeah, it definitely set the tone for the rest of the series. The women's class had about 10 riders on the weekend, which is more than most regional events, but it would still be great to see more females lining up on the gate. How did the numbers and the level of racing on the weekend compare to previous years in your experience?
I think the numbers were slightly lower on the weekend. I think there's been a few new girls coming out of juniors that just weren't able to make it for various reasons. And then a few senior girls who stepped away or moved into state. So it's kind of, it was missing a few riders, but I honestly think the next round will pick up a little bit more.
Yeah.
And also being on the same weekend as the AORC, I think it possibly affected it a little bit because some of those girls can tend to come across or so they don't have to choose one or the other kind of thing. But the level of riding's, it was really good actually. Like, obviously, there wasn't heaps of us out there, but when I would come across the other girls there, they were riding really well. Considering how technical the track was, they were managing it fine. Like, it wasn't like they were constantly tipping over or, losing balance and struggling. Like, there's obviously a few tip overs, but I tipped it over twice myself on Saturday. This comes with the nature of a ruddy track, but I'd say Kaylee, she stepped up to the expert class this year. I think she was doing really well. And then the clubman girls, a few new girls. Like, I know Chloe is her first motocross race.
Yeah.
So she did awesome. But I think it's good. I think it's just like, it will get better as the season progresses, I think.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think we can do to get more women turning up at the VIX and into racing in general? Or I think at the Pro-MX, they've reduced the age that women can step up into the senior class. Is that something you think would help at the state level as well?
Yeah, I think it could definitely help because I know there's a few girls that ride the junior lights classes or things like that, or even come from interstate, like Emily Lambert. She was there on the weekend racing the boys, which was really, really good to see. And so I think, you could always, you know, do the same kind of thing as the nationals. That would definitely encourage a few more girls just to get their feet wet, I guess, before they, you know, fully go seniors, let's say.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I think if we can do things to encourage girls, like have more women's days and stuff like that, like how we've previously had that City MX just the past, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, that was really good. It's just, it's continuing to help girls develop because it is quite daunting for them to get out there, especially, you know, being in the same race as ourselves. Like, obviously, we race them cleanly and give them plenty of room, but it can be daunting for them when you're passing them at speed and stuff like that. But, yeah, I guess just keep encouraging them and, you know, think they'll come when they're ready.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, the level of racing and the track on the weekend, like, that would be a great stepping stone as well, you know, for women that want to long-term step up to Pro-MX. So, you know, doing what we can to get more females on the gate at the state level is a fantastic idea. It's well known that you do a lot of coaching and work with younger riders and are an ambassador for women's motorcycling. Tell me a little bit about some of the things that you've been doing in that regard.
Yeah, so I definitely love my coaching and being an ambassador for women in motorsport. I really do enjoy it. And, you know, I love working with the youth and just seeing them progress and, you know, seeing someone go from not riding a bike to starting and then into racing. So I do a range of different mentoring. I do weekly programs, like after school programs, just for an hour or two, just, you know, to help kids either gain skills and confidence on their bike, or for the more serious kids who are wanting to, you know, get that weekly training and push a bit harder.
Yep.
I also go to women's days, like with City MX, and I do coaching days with my brother Joel as well. I do mentorship programs at even primary schools, just on sport and safety and things like that. There's a whole range of things I do and I really, really do enjoy. I do mentoring on sometimes recently just at some of the races, like a regional race at Colac, which has been really cool to see, like, one of my young riders, Talia Felton. I first started working with her when she learnt to ride a bike, which was really, really cool. And now it's only a couple of years later and she's battling for wins at a Western, which is just, to me, mind-blowing. So it's been really, really cool to have that experience now to mentor them for their race day, whether it's in nutrition or line selection, helping the parents. You know, whatever it might be, it's been really, really enjoyable and something I love to do now and look forward to growing more in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely live, eat and breathe motocross, don't you?
I definitely do. I just love it. It's everything about bikes. It's, you know, it's my passion of something that I've always loved since I was a kid. And, you know, I've grown up, you know, riding with my brother and my dad and my family. So, you know, we all do it together. So it keeps it, you know, super fun still and just something we do as a family. So it's very rewarding and special time with them.
Oh, that's so amazing. And finally, this year you've started your own team, which is backed by Nutrien Ag. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I've got given the opportunity by Honda to run my own team, which would work just a little bit better with me with my racing and the way my program is structured. So, yeah, it's been great to have Nutrien hop on board. That they've been a personal sponsor of mine for a few years now. So having them as a team naming rights sponsor is, you know, something very special for me and something I definitely don't take for granted. It's a massive opportunity. But, yeah, I've been had the opportunity to work for a lot of great brands this year that I'm very passionate about. I'm working with Fox this year, which is really cool. It's my first year riding for them. I know I used to wear them when I was a kid and stuff like that. And I've had a lot of local companies hop on board to help me, obviously, get through the season and support me with all my racing. So that's been super special to have, like, Begbie's Contracting come on board, Gold Acres, ATK Concreting, Next Moto Group, Pot Race. There's a whole, you know, a vast group of people from Ballarat region, even a coffee company, to both coffee roasting and Synchronistic Health and Wellbeing. Like, they're all making such a good program for me. So it's been really, really special just to have that backing from people that are just as passionate about what I do as what I am. So it's definitely a nice feel coming into the year, and I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, that's great to hear. Are you looking to potentially add more riders under that pit tent, or is it just a one-man or one-woman show at this stage?
I definitely would love to add more riders. This year was a bit late in the piece. Like, this all came together quite late in the year, so I didn't have the opportunity to kind of organise another rider. I was had my hands full organising myself, if I'm honest. But I definitely loved it. I definitely would really like to have a female rider on. That's something I'd be really passionate about, but it's something I'd have to obviously discuss with Honda and see what their goals are for me and where they're wanting me to put my support and stuff like that. But yeah, I would love to run a women's team if I could. That's something I'd be really, really passionate about, and even supporting some younger riders, like MX3 riders or MX2. Like, I just love the sports. If I can support anyone, I'd be definitely happy to.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast and, having a little chat with me today. I think, you know, you've done so much in the sport. I would love to get you back on and do a longer form podcast at some stage if you're keen.
Yeah, I'd definitely love to. No, that'd be really awesome to have a full chat with you. And I really appreciate what you've done for us in the state title so far this year, the coverage you've been getting. So I'd definitely love to support what you're doing and hop on and have a good chat.
Oh, well, thank you, and good luck with the rest of the series.
Thank you so much.
Cheers. Thanks, Emma. All right, it's time to move on to Sunday's racing. The track crew did an absolutely phenomenal job prepping the track following Saturday's races. They got plenty of water back into it, and it looked like it was ripped and then rolled in preparation for Sunday. So as Emma mentioned, it shaped up a little bit differently to Saturday. It was still super challenging, but it didn't get quite as deep and ended up being a real mix of technical ruts and rougher, faster sections with a few more square edges than we saw on Saturday. Once again, Sunday featured some phenomenal racing, and I think the way that the track formed up differently actually ended up favouring slightly different skill sets, just enough to mix things up a little bit from the day before. In the MX2 class, however, it was A-grade Wilson Greener Daish once again who proved too strong, and he has clearly put himself out there as the rider to beat this year, once again finishing the day with 3 straight wins. His Elliott Brothers teammate George Knight finished the day in second and taking out 3rd place in the A-grade MX2 class by a countback was Hugh Roach. Incidentally, the night after the racing, Roach's bike got stolen, I think it was around Hamilton. So if everyone listening can keep an eye out, hopefully it can be recovered and returned to him. That's a real bummer for Roach. In this class, there's currently only 5 points separating 3rd to 6th. So I think it's going to turn into a real dogfight for the podium over the coming rounds. And it's going to be really cool to see how things develop as the championship progresses. Like Wilson Greener Daish in the A-grade class, in MX2 B-grade, it was Austin Boyd who rose to the occasion with a dominating performance, also going 3 for 3. Oscar Kimber finished the day going 2-2-2 for 2nd overall, with Charlie Roos in 3rd place. An unfortunate crash in Moto1 kept Baylen Townsend off the podium in this round, but he's going to be one to watch as the season progresses as well, coming from dead last to 11th in the first moto and finishing 3-3 in moto 2 and 3. Moving on to MX2 C grade, we saw another perfect moto score to round out the MX2 class winners, with Judd Chislett also taking the honours with 3 straight wins over Jack Silcock and Jet Bennett. In MX1 C grade, it was a slightly less consistent affair. I think at this level and on such technical tracks that we're likely to see throughout the series for both the MX1 and MX2 C grade guys, it's ultimately going to be about consistency that wins the championship. On Sunday in MX1 C, it was Jack Sheether who took the top step, with Phoenix Watson and Brendan Lerschel completing the podium. In MX1 B, Ryan Kenny and Charlie Roos swapped wins in Motos 1 and 2, with Kenny taking the victory in the 3rd for the overall. Charlie Roos finished second for the day, with Bryce Clay rounding out the top three. Before we move on, I need to give Charlie Roos an extra shout-out. Charlie Roos was last year's junior 125 and 250 B-grade Victorian champion, stepping up to the senior ranks this year, as you might have picked up by now if you were listening intently. He raced three classes over the weekend in Portland, finishing fifth in the All Powers on Saturday, third overall in MX2 B-grade, and second in MX1 B-grade. I'm not sure where this guy gets his energy, but I definitely want some of whatever he's having. And now onto the premier class, MX1 A-grade. And while we didn't see any of the factory riders come down to race round one, nonetheless, this class is stacked, and I think I counted about 13 or 14 riders on the gate who are regulars on the Pro-MX circuit. Rocking the number one plate was defending MX1 champion Bryce Ognenis, and he definitely made a statement that he is keen to repeat with perfect moto scores in the MX1 A-grade class. He had some battles early in the motos with Jacob Sweet, who has made his return to racing after dislocating his elbow at the MX Open at Wonthaggi earlier this year. Levi McManus and Seager Ward finished the day tied on points, with McManus getting third overall on account of his better finish in Moto 3. It was also good to see Liam Jackson, who finished the day fifth, back on track as well. Liam dislocated his shoulder at the Newcastle Supercross last year, requiring surgery. Chatting to Liam after the race, he wasn't stoked with his fifth place, and I think we could see him getting in the mix as well for the upcoming rounds. All right, it's time to call in our final guest for the show. He's the defending MX1 A-grade Victorian motocross champion with a perfect weekend at round one. Bryce Ognenis, welcome to the Peter Stevens Vic MX Recap Show. How you going, mate? Have you recovered from your weekend?
Yeah, mate. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I have recovered and I'm back training Tuesday now. So it was a good weekend. Had fun, rode good, and good results too. So I'm pretty stoked.
Oh, definitely, mate. You you showed them all how to do it. So congratulations, first of all, on such a good start to defending your Victorian motocross title in the premier class. You copped some heat through the day from Jacob Sweet and Levi McManus. Talk me through your races a little bit.
Yeah, so Moto1, I was just going out there open-minded and just expecting everyone to give me what they got. And I went out there, got a decent start. I think I might have been P2 or 3 or something like that. And just grinded away, tried to put the first few laps were pretty fast, and then tried to maintain a bit of a lead. So yeah, once I established a bit of lead, I just kind of cruised a little bit.
Yep.
Tried to make no mistakes and just rode consistent. And
Oh, fantastic. And what about the next two motos?
Yeah, so Moto2 was also good. I think I might have got the whole shot in that one. rode away with it pretty much. So didn't really want to look back too much, just kept looking forward, putting down consistent laps, trying a couple of different things.
Yep.
That I've been working on during the week, just to, you know, obviously try and find a couple more lines and try and have, I guess, something up my sleeve for the next moto, just in case I didn't get a good start. I rode away with that one, and then the last one, second into the first corner, made a quick pass, and then just rode away with it again. Just kind of just put down the first four laps as fast as I could do it, hang it out a bit, and then just back it down to something that was maintainable and not too risky. So that was good.
Yeah, on that note, the track looked very, very technical. So how did you find it to go fast? Like, was it one of those tracks where you sort of got to be slow and methodical to go fast, or were you able to hang it out?
No, you definitely have to be pretty precise. There are like eight ruts going into nearly most corners anyway. Obviously remembering what rut was a bit of a struggle for me. I remember finding myself in a couple of lines that I wasn't in the lap before. So it was it definitely was hard to kind of remember what rut you were going into. But once you kind of got that flow, I'm pretty good in that stuff only because that's what I grew up riding, that hard pack, kind of sketchy stuff. I know the last moto I started to bake out a little bit, but the whole day was good. The track was packy all day, and I've actually did a really good job. That was the ruddiest track I reckon I've rode in a while.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that because it was actually deeper on the Saturday.
I'm feeling a little bit that I didn't ride the Saturday because I reckon I would have liked it. But yeah, that's all right.
Yeah. So were you nervous in the morning going into the day? Because I know a couple of those guys that you were up against raced in the All Powers class on the Saturday, and you were obviously going to see that track for the first time. Have you got a fair bit of experience out at Portland, or you just backed yourself and turned up ready to rock?
I don't have much experience there. I did the Westerns there at the start of the year just to get my feet wet a little bit.
Yep.
Kind of worked out what way the track went. And then I just backed myself that I'll just come out swinging on Sunday only and get it done, which worked out well. I'm trying not to wear myself out before race day. I've always been that one to do that extra bit too much and end up a bit tired. So I was like, you know what, I'll do a couple of laps just at the local track near my house and then go down there and just come out. And I've been riding a fair bit, so I'm confident in the way I'm riding at the moment to go out there straight away and go as fast as I can.
Yeah, whatever you're doing, it looks like it's working.
Yeah.
The number of riders in the MX1 class was fairly healthy, and the number of riders across the whole Vic MX championship, both at the junior and senior levels, looks like it's on the up again. But what are your thoughts on the level of competition this year? I thought we might have seen a few more of the Victorian guys that you race in the MX1 class at the Pro MX turning up to race the Vic Champs, but maybe they don't want any of that smoke, mate. So what's your thoughts on the level of competition?
Nah, it's definitely up there. Obviously, Sweetie's fast. He's got that fast raw speed straight away, which is actually blows my mind sometimes.
Yeah.
But, the other boys behind him, Seager Ward, Levi McManus, they're fast as well.
Yeah.
And then behind them is also, right there. Wouldn't want to really get too far back because I know by the time you got to the front, dude, they would be too far away to make anything happen.
Oh, for sure.
So other than that, even the 250s, they're fast. The competition in the 250s, I'm watching pretty much every class, just having a look and seeing what's out there. It definitely does look pretty competitive anyway. I feel like anyone in Victoria that's fast is there, you know what I mean? Can't really be much more competitive than that unless you get some blow-ins from interstate.
No, definitely. I mean, you just got to look at the names, that go down from even 5th to 10th. You've got guys like Liam Jackson, Cooper Kreslick, Jet Kipps, Riley Futschko, Caleb Goulette's back there.
Yep.
And some of those guys are just sort of coming back from some time off as well. So I think as the series progresses, they're going to put some heat on you for sure.
Oh, that's well, they've all beat me before, so... It'll be interesting to see if they can give me something anyway. But yeah, they have bet me before, so possible.
Yeah, well, that keeps you hungry, and
that's it. It's definitely better for me if obviously the level of competition is right on the back of me, keep pushing me forward, and then that way I get better, they get better, and then as soon as they get in front of me, then I've got something to chase as well. So it's all good.
Yeah. So speaking of training, what do you do sort of off the bike to prepare yourself for the Victorian Championship? Obviously, you race Pro MX as well. So, yeah, are you pretty self-motivated? What do you do to train in between?
Yeah, I'm pretty disciplined. I don't rely on motivation too much. But, yeah, I've got the Duns training me 2 days a week. So they've been helping me out a lot, and I appreciate it heaps from them. And then I'll just do my own things here and there just throughout the week, either if it is I'll go to the pools or... Or go to the spas or do something like that just to break it up. But yeah, I also ride during the week here and there. So I try and get one day in during the week, and if another day happens, if it doesn't, it doesn't. It's all good.
I know the organisers at MV and Peter Stevens are really putting a big effort in this year to try give you guys, the riders, a lot more of a spotlight, like in terms of publicity and exposure. I know you've spoken out in the past a little bit about support for privateers. What are your thoughts, and is that helping you this year? Have you actually noticed that there's been a little bit more exposure and media coverage of the event and the privateers in general?
Honestly, I have. So I was thinking about it on Sunday. Even when you do the interviews at the end of the day and you've got the banner in the background and stuff like that, looks really professional. So stuff like that is cool to see. And then there's people that, obviously take photos and do all that stuff that obviously helps us out heaps. And then stuff like Instagram and a simple thing is tagging us riders and doing stuff like that. I appreciate it heaps. And I think that it would help us, obviously become more known.
Yeah.
Because
other than that, I know people that I've raced for like 15 years, and up until probably this year, I've only just started to get recognised. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I think what you're doing now is really cool. And like just like something like what we're doing right now is I think that's great for the sport. And privateers gives everyone the opportunity to have something to say and speak out and, yeah, thank their sponsors and everything like that. It's great.
Well, as I said on the when I did the recap show for the juniors as well, like I've opened up interviewing some of the sort of the top riders, the winners, but throughout the, you know, the remaining podcast recap shows, I want to get down through and talk to guys that are racing B grade and C grade as well, like just give everyone an opportunity to speak on the podcast.
100%, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, but in terms of exposure, like those podium interviews that we put up on Instagram, they've had nearly 5,000 plays in the last 24 hours or the first 24 hours of them going up. So there's definitely a lot of interest in the scene, you know, and what you guys are doing, even at the state level. Yeah, which has been great to see. And even the recap show, like the downloads have been awesome. So, you know, it'd be great just to keep this growing and making it easier for you guys to get to the races. Oh, on that note, who supports your program and what do they do for you?
Yeah, so Extreme MX Gear is obviously helping me out with gear and then helped me out actually to get another bike to have two bikes, which is the first year I've kind of had two bikes ever.
Yep.
Which is cool. I've kind of been the dude that runs a practice bike all year and then turns into a race bike for the weekend. So they've helped me out great. Mark Mann is also helping me with the same bike. I've also got, I had Steve Powell on board with suspension, but he's obviously recently shut. He's a good guy. I still love him. Great. He helped me out heaps.
Yeah.
And I always appreciate what he's done for me. Christian's just recently come on board and talking about suspension. So they're helping me out. Obviously, just building a relationship as we go. Myself, work carpentry.
Yep.
Obviously, sacrificed a fair bit of my younger years to start that and build it up to what it is now, which allows me to, I guess, race and fund it all. My old man, my family, everyone like that helps me out heaps. I think that might be it. Oh, the Dunn family as well, helping me out.
Yep.
And yeah, I reckon that's it.
So what's your plans for the rest of the series? You're obviously going to do the whole series and try to defend your title. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I'll do the whole lot. I'm going to try and do as much as I can this year. I say that every year, but I want to up it again.
Yep.
And do as much as I can this year. And yeah, just get better. I just want to improve. Like, even though that I won on the weekend, I know that that's not all I want to be just able to do. I want to go further than that and obviously take my riding ability up that next step, even at the Nationals, and just get better and better.
Yep. So if the opportunity arose for a ride on one of the support teams or even a factory team, would you? Is that something you'd be interested in?
Yeah, definitely. I would be keen to do something like that as long as it's, I guess, something that would work out better for me.
Yep.
So I've got to weigh it up. I know there's a few different rides out there at the moment. And I actually did get offered a ride at the start of the year that I turned down just because it was probably a little bit too close to the season.
Yeah, okay, yep.
And I'm when you're at the start of the season, you obviously don't want to change too much. So I was happy just to kind of stay with my own program and just have the same people help me out again, which works. Not too bad, but yeah, obviously there's new opportunities and stuff like that I do have to consider.
Oh, unreal, man. That's well, it'd be great to see you either way. You know, keep going as a privateer and doing what you're doing now because you're having success, or yeah, if the opportunity arises, it'd be great to see you on a supported ride as well. It's been awesome having you on the podcast. Yeah, thanks for coming on the show, and it's been great to chat.
Beautiful. Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, Bryce. And that wraps up another episode of the Peter Stevens Vic MX Recap Show presented by MotoCred. The next round of the Victorian Championships will be the second junior round, which is scheduled to take place on the 11th and 12th of May at the Currumburra Motorcycle Club. Thanks to our guests who have joined me on this episode, Michael Davis, Emma Milicevic, and Bryce Agnenis. And thanks to you guys for listening. I've been your host, Pete Wolf. Until next time, see ya.